Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we're at the Roswell Civic Center, and we are, of course, broadcasting in honor of the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash. We've had Don Burleson on before, and a very interesting person, to say the least. Plus, you talked about the Marilyn Monroe-Bobby Kennedy connection here, didn't you, Don?
Yes, I did, on Thursday.
Yeah, welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So we'll cover some of that again, because we talked about it one time before. But
yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what you've been up to. What have you been doing anything else?
Oh, well, you know, life never gets very boring in the field of UFO studies.
I mean,
there's
always
something going on. I am the state director for MUFON for New Mexico, and, of course, we do get sighting reports, and we do have things, you know, kind of channeled along to us, you know,
There seems to be some changes nationally with MUFON. We've done several shows about that with the new director, nice
mm-hmm.
fellow.
Yep, and James Carrion's doing a very good job.
What's happening in New Mexico as far as, you know, we think of New Mexico and all the government projects, but there's still a lot of other things being seen.
Like I said, we do get sighting reports, I would say, on the average of maybe a couple a month, you know. Yeah. And actually, as state director, I get an automatic email when a sighting report comes in. I mean, that's...
Yeah, we talked how it was set up, yeah, and that is the way
there's this management system, the CMS, mm-hmm. you know, on the MUFON website. At least anything that's reported that way, if somebody submits it, you know, through those channels, then I get an email, and what I try to do is assign it to one of my field investigators. I'm a field investigator myself. There are eight others in the state.
Well, you get your wife in training.
And, yes, Molly is a field investigator trainee.
Yeah, right. And so there's some other trainees. Is he a tough taskmaster? No, he's doing fine. She's a good...
She says, yes, I'm a tough taskmaster. I guess I am. But,
that's good. You know, that's one of the things you need to do is you do a thorough investigation, I understand.
Well, they keep us honest, you know, the MUFON International Headquarters. Uh-huh. You know, they've basically got a ranking system where the state directors kind of compete, you know, to see who can come out with the top most rankings, you know, by state and so on, because there's kind of a point system where, you know, you're essentially judged, as it should be, on how quickly you get cases assigned, how quickly you get them, you know, basically processed, you know, taken care of.
When you have volunteers, you kind of have to follow them along, have guidelines.
And so
they're probably really dedicated.
I really do now, you know, more than ever before, try to get, you know, cases assigned quickly and try to get them, you know, try to check back with whoever is investigating them and see how it's going. And I have some really good field investigators in the state. I'm very lucky to have them. They're doing a real great job running things down for us, and like I said, things never do get boring. There's always something going on.
Yeah. For the state of New Mexico, is there a certain place, since you're the state director, is there a certain area that probably has more UFO sightings than another area?
UFO sightings, of course, tend to correlate in their density, you know, fairly closely with population density for the simple reason that...
So it'd be around Albuquerque.
Yeah, mostly around Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and of course the reasons for that are obvious, you know, the more pairs of eyes there are, the more things get seen. It's just like the correlation time-wise, you know, no mystery at all to the fact that, for example, most UFO sightings happen in warm weather, you know.
Yeah, because there are more
summer sightings than any other seasons for the simple reason that people are outside looking at the sky.
But there have been lots of reports and snowstorms and blizzards of people seeing. So obviously they're probably out there. We just don't see them.
Yeah, you can pretty well bet, you know, there's always strange stuff in the skies.
Yeah, in other words, UFO sightings themselves, the weather doesn't seem to be a factor other than people seeing and reporting.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, there's not a little correlation, if it's snowstorm or snow country or forest country, like it. New Mexico's got all kinds of terrain, you know, desert, low desert, high desert, Santa Fe, etc.
There tend to be a lot of...
And then you get up to ski country. So
yeah.
So what do the sightings have any kind of correlation with the topography?
With terrain and topography? Well, somewhat. There tend to be a lot of desert sightings, I think for the simple reason that in the desert, you can see the sky, you know.
That's a good point.
Not to belabor the obvious, but, you know, if you live in some big cities, you probably would be amazed to see what the sky really looks like, you know, if you ever got a chance to see it. People come out to the desert and just walk around amazed sometimes for the first few days they're out here that they can actually see the sky, you know, from horizon to horizon.
Yeah, when you've lived here how long now?
Oh, about 11 years.
Yeah. You kind of take after you. I lived in Las Vegas for a long time in the desert, and you'd kind of take a lot of that for granted that you forgot about the awe factor when you first moved here.
Yeah,
you know, about seeing the sky.
Exactly. Yeah, but it is. You can watch people who newly come out do it. You know,
and then
wow. Reminds you all over again just how amazing it really is. You know.
So at your lecture here, your speech, your presentation,
right?
What actually did you cover?
Well, basically, I presented the hypothesis that Marilyn Monroe was murdered to keep her quiet about UFO-related secrets.
And we have an interview with Don on our website about this in great detail that we'll link to from this page as well. And that we'll cover that in great detail if they want to hear it. But go into a little bit of this now.
Well, this year actually I had an enlarged slideshow. You know, I did add some stuff to the slideshow. I had some photos and things I didn't have before.
And you kind of give us a little thumbnail speech.
Basically the hypothesis is, and again, you know, I have to explain kind of where I'm coming from. I'm
sure.
One of the hard science guys in this field. You know, I think in terms of the scientific method, in terms of hypotheses and validating them and so on. You know, basically, I believe, you know, what there's evidence for. I see no particular reason to believe what there's not evidence for. And
are you still involved in higher education?
I'm actually in the process of retiring from the mathematics department at Eastern New Mexico University, but I'll still be doing some teaching.
That was a polite way to ask if you were still teaching.
I'm still teaching mathematics, I love it. But I do come at this from the standpoint of a scientist, and you know, basically what you do is you form an hypothesis, and you try to see to it that hypothesis is formed in such a way that it better accounts for things that are observed than other hypotheses do. My hypothesis is that, as I said, she was basically whacked, you know, by the Kennedys for.
Yeah, and we discussed the evidence you laid out about the men.
There's the CIA memo, you know, there's the Shulgin imprint that I found on the CIA memo that links that memo with General Shulgin, who was basically the chief UFO investigator for the Air Force, in effect. He was chief of Air Intelligence Requirements Division for the old Army Air Corps and likewise for the Air Force when it became a separate branch of the service. And the evidence really, I think, is pretty strong. That hypothesis, I believe, accounts for everything that we know about Marilyn's death, and we do know a great deal now, better than other hypotheses would. For example, you know, people have alternatively suggested that, for instance, the mafia killed her, but in fact, Milo Spiriglio wrote a book years ago about that. But actually, that's kind of silly because the mafia really didn't want her dead. They had her house so heavily wiretapped and suited up with audio surveillance and whatnot.
And this was because Bobby Kennedy was a regular visitor.
They were digging up dirt on Bobby, and of course, as soon as Marilyn died, all of that wire got ripped out of the house and everything, and their source of information, at least on that
from there,
you know, on
right
that,
up.
On that site, you know, was gone. They still had wiretaps, you know, Peter Lawford's beach house in Santa Monica and that kind of thing. But a lot of information kind of dried up for them when Marilyn died. They didn't want her dead, you know. But my hypothesis, I think, accounts for things very clearly. Why do the audio surveillance tapes, according to the people who heard them before they were impounded, for example, show Bobby Kennedy so deranged, screaming,
he was
raving.
Like a madman.
He was like a madman. You could barely recognize his voice. I mean, come on. You know, basically, you have to wonder what justifies reactions that extreme and what doesn't. You know, and there's how you look at your hypotheses. You basically look and see how strongly does an hypothesis account for what we see and what we hear and what we know.
So could you make out what he was screaming?
Basically, the people who heard the tape said that he was saying something like, actually, I can't say everything that he said on the air, but he basically said, where is it? Where the blank is it? You know, I'll pay you for it. We have to have it. My family will pay you for it. Where is it? He was looking for the diary. Jeannie Carmen was over at Marilyn's house one day when Bobby was there, and Bobby grabbed the diary up and flung it across the room and said, "Get rid of this." You know, and he was really paranoid about it.
So now he was talking about getting rid of the diary because of their relationship, right?
Well, he was talking about it because he and other government officials were worried about what she might have written down in it. The CIA memo makes it very clear that they were quite worried about what she might have written down. You know, they call it the little diary of secrets, you know, and they knew that she had written things, for example,
your premise, if I remember, is she was going to blow the UFO story.
Oh, yeah. She had actually said, she had told any number of her friends, and she had actually been heard, of course, in the wiretaps and in the audio surveillance, saying she was going to hold a news conference that Monday morning and tell all. And, of course, the phrase "tell all," I think, was something that could have made them extremely nervous, considering what that all might have included.
Well, right.
And see, we don't really know whether Marilyn had actually written about her knowledge of, you know, a UFO crash retrieval in the diary night. It doesn't matter, actually, whether she actually wrote that in there or not. The point is, the CIA obviously was concerned that she might have.
And the diary, of course, has been destroyed or missing.
Well, it's missing. I put in a Freedom of Information Act request to the CIA some years ago for it. They denied that they had it. The other request I put in was for the wiretap transcripts on her telephones. And basically, of course, they turned that down. And when they did, I filed an appeal with the CIA document appended as justification for the appeal, because it says she was under surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
And they accepted the appeal and sent the whole thing to the agency release panel, which, of course, had the delightful effect of authenticating the document. I'm sure they didn't intend to do me any favors, but they did me one.
Yeah.
big time.
Did you ever get to see any of that at all?
What do you mean?
The information you were asking.
Well, no, they never did actually release anything.
No.
And, of course, I knew they wouldn't. I mean, basically, they couldn't give me the wiretap transcripts, because what is on those transcripts has to be spectacular. We know that Jose Bolaños called her just 30 minutes before she died, and later, 21 years later, when interviewed by Anthony Summers, actually said, Marilyn told me something shocking, something that will one day shock the whole world. This was in 1983, he said.
And so that wouldn't be just I'm having an affair with the president's brother.
That was well known. The wives even knew it. I mean, it wasn't. People have said, well, maybe they didn't want their wives to know. The wives knew. I mean, come on, Ethel actually called Marilyn one time when Jeannie Carmen was over and screamed at her, you know, you little tramp, stay away from my husband, stay away from Bobby. All this, and of course, Jackie knew. Jackie didn't even go to the birthday party on May 19th, 1962, where Marilyn sang to the president, because she's so ticked off that Marilyn was going to do that she left town. She went riding with her friends in Virginia, horseback riding.
So this spectacular event could very well have been the UFO thing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. If you use logic, that's probably what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, again, the hypothesis would be that it was that. There are other hypotheses, but, you know, what one ultimately has to ask oneself is, how well does the Marilyn UFO hypothesis account for things compared to other hypotheses? And my claim is that, yeah, as you say, in terms of the logic, it counts for them better.
You think Marilyn, and I'm sure you followed this avenue up about UFOs. If I had somebody in a top government position, like Attorney General or President, that right. told me something about UFOs and ETs or whatever,
yeah.
I couldn't help but tell other people.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that would be very hard to...
That's the problem I have with these stories about Serpo and things like that. I don't care who they are. If you went to another planet and came back, and I don't care how sworn to secrecy you were, you're going to tell somebody.
Yeah. It must have been a really hard thing to stay quiet about. And, you know, the thing that must have been really terrifying for the Kennedy brothers was that they probably, see, you know, Jack was a blabbermouth. I mean, Marilyn wasn't the first, wasn't the last. You know, he was dating Inga Arvad, you know, when he was in Naval Intelligence. She was probably a Nazi spy. I mean, she sat in the same box with Hitler at the Munich Games. What can I tell you? And Jack was handling classified information in the morning and dating her in the evening. I mean, that's real judgment, isn't it? Later on, he was with other women. After his affair with Marilyn, but while Marilyn was still alive, he had an affair with Mary Pinchot Meyer, and the CIA shot her. Basically, again, out of the same kind of paranoid concern that Jack had told her things that they didn't think anybody should know.
Well, you mentioned it. Both of the Kennedys were shot. Who shot them?
Well, that's, of course, always going to be a tough one. People are always asking me, you know, do you think there was a connection between the Marilyn problem and the assassination? I'm inclined not to think there's a direct connection. You know, everything's connected to everything else if you follow enough cracks in the china, you know, but I don't think there's a direct connection.
Okay. So you're still very active with UFOs for MUFON as state director.
Yep.
And you're still doing research. You haven't given up on this hypothesis at all. You put this book out, right?
Yeah, UFOs and the Murder of Marilyn Monroe.
And it's still available?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes. My website is, my publisher's website is blackmesapress.com. And the book is there. There's a PayPal button, and we make it all very easy. We think that this is the most controversial book about Marilyn ever written, but we think it's we can support, you know, all these
you got
claims.
Another book you're going to write another book?
I'll be doing it, especially now that I'm going to be retiring. I've got a little bit more time, you know, looming on my hands. I'm going to probably be doing some more books.
I mean, it goes a long ways from a mathematics professor to a book author.
Well,
and not that mathematics professors don't write books, of course they
yeah,
do.
Yeah, it's I think it all kind of stems from the same impulses. You know, yeah. Besides teaching, I do research in mathematics and mm-hmm. matrix theory. I just discovered a new theorem in December in the theory of matrices. And I've put that actually on a page on my website, hoping that somebody will look at it and see if they can find out how it applies to quantum theory, because I think it does. I'm not a physicist, and so I don't exactly know how it would apply, but I think it must. And I think all of these impulses kind of stem from the same sort of attitudes. You know, if you want to produce things, you want to try to be creative. You know, the irony is, I'm 65. I was 64 going on 65 when I discovered the theorem. They always say that one's mathematical creativity is supposed to dry up at about the age of 40. Or so, but actually, that's a load of crap, if you ask me.
So you haven't felt that, at least as far as you're concerned.
Oh, certainly not. I mean, actually, John von Neumann, you know, said that mathematicians were through being creative at the age of 25. And I don't know what the hell he was talking about. He wasn't through at the age of 25. So, I mean, come on, what is he saying?
Well, you're a mathematics guy. You're into this stuff. You're not. We mentioned quantum physics. How do you explain all of these UFOs? I guess there's something involved there. They go from zero to God knows how fast.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
you know,
there's been more than one sighting of that.
Of course, and I think really, you know,
how does that happen?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's ironic. Carl Sagan, and I really liked Carl, you know. I was devastated when he died so young, you know. But Carl used to say that he didn't think that we were visited by aliens,
right,
because of the vast distances involved and so forth. Carl perfectly well knew better than that. You know, he knew that basically that was assuming that, you know, we know everything about physics that they do, and of course that's an assumption that cannot actually be maintained or supported. But of course Carl didn't really think these things, you know. In private, Carl actually thought that some UFOs were real and we had been visited.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was actually...
I thought he was a complete skeptic.
No. He said he was, but it was because he was protective of his public funding and everything. Carl was actually sitting backstage with Alan Hynek one time, waiting to go on for a discussion. Alan Hynek was the founder of the Center for UFO Studies in Chicago. And they were sitting there together, and it was going to be kind of a friendly debate, you know, on some TV show. And just before they were called to go on, Carl turned to Alan and said, you know, Alan, I know as well as you do that some UFOs are real, but if you think I'm going to walk out there in front of a television camera, in front of an audience, and say something like that and endanger my funding, my grant money, and so forth, I'm sorry, you're wrong. I'm just not going to do it. I can't do it.
Well, that kind of, in a nutshell, describes part of the problem with the UFO field, doesn't it?
Of course. I'm an academic, and of course, I was lucky enough to be working in a place where it wasn't a stigma of any kind. I mean, after all, Eastern New Mexico University, I mean, we're in Roswell, right?
You can talk
about UFOs, and nobody gets too unstrung.
You know, I was talking to somebody last night about that. This is a good place, even with the atmosphere and everything, at least you can discuss the subject with a straight face.
Yeah.
And people listen to you.
Well, and if you're an academic here, you can actually be interested.
That's what's talking about. On a higher level, people are still accepting.
And they're not going to get, you know, here they're not going to get all down on you and everything for doing that.
Right.
But, you know, really, in many universities, if you were vocally interested in UFOs and you were going up for tenure, you'd probably you'd have a problem.
Oh yeah, we've discussed that with several people.
Yeah, I mean it's still considered déclassé. You know what really ticks me off?
What?
The fact that you walk into a bookstore and you look for the UFO books, and you know where you find them shelved? You find them with books on tarot card reading and astrology and fortune telling and witchcraft and so forth. But come on, give me a break. Those things are basically worthless forms of superstition.
Mm-hmm.
The UFO phenomenon is science. At least at its best it should be.
Yeah, and it seems to be getting more acceptance, I believe, around them. I'm judging this more or less from the way the media reports things. They still have the smile factor in it, but not as much as they used to.
Not as much. And, you know, I think one has to be a little perspicacious about their motives and their reasons sometimes for not reporting things fully. I think probably in some cases there are still things the media do not feel welcome reporting, do not feel free to report. I'm quite sure that at times people have been told, don't cover this story.
They do that directly occasionally, but usually they lead. The media is supposed to be, I'll tell you, I've been in the entertainment business, broadcast business, supposed to be an original business. You cannot take any project to any broadcast network or any broadcaster or any station, and the first word out of an original business place where you're supposed to be creative is, the executive will say, well, where has it been done before, and how did it play?
Right, yeah.
So, right there alone, they're not going to do anything. Now,
it's a little like universities. Universities are supposed to be avant-garde and cutting edge, but actually they're in some ways sometimes very conservative.
And they always talk about the liberal media. Well, they're not very liberal on a lot of subjects. I'm going to tell you that I've been in the media for 45 years. But what they say, and it's true to a certain extent, I face it every day. We're an independent broadcaster and we sell advertising.
Right.
Agencies believe they'd like to buy it.
Right.
They want to buy the advertising, but the only way they can get the sponsor to go forward is maybe to have some clever commercials about cows being beamed up to saucers or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's beginning to change a little.
Oh, I certainly hope so.
And ratings-wise and numbers-wise, UFO shows do very well, and that's the reason you see more of them all the time.
Yeah, well, I guess things have come a long way since 1947 with what happened to KGFL here in town. You know that story, of course. KGFL was told actually three times in the same day via calls from Washington,
you lose your license.
Yeah, basically don't broadcast the more elaborate Mac Brazel interview because you do have an FCC license and you can lose it. In fact, one of them, I guess it was Frank Joyce, was told, you know, you guys could end up just walking the sidewalk this afternoon. I mean, you know, we can shut you down right now. Actually, delicensure doesn't work that way properly.
No.
Under normal circumstances, if you're going to yank the license of a radio station,
it takes time.
Yeah, there are appeal procedures.
Oh, sure. I've been with radio operators who broke every book, and the FCC had come in with a surprise inspection and still took them forever to get it done.
Yeah, so, you know.
But
you know,
they use that intimidation thing.
Here you have to look at the logic. Under normal circumstances, a station would not be threatened with loss of licensure in that manner. Therefore, since they were so threatened, these were not normal circumstances.
Right. And you know that's the way they do. Basically, that's the way the government has always worked in all fields. Intimidation, when they don't have the facts on their side,
right,
and they can't really do something to you, they try to put the fear of God in you.
Or when they do have the facts and they wish they didn't.
Oh well, that's basically right. And that's a good way to end the interview. Tell me the name of the book again.
UFOs and the Murder of Marilyn Monroe.
And it's available on the website, as you mentioned. We have a link on our website to it. And thanks very much, Don.
Thank you. My
pleasure. Always enjoy talking.
My pleasure.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the Civic Center in Roswell. I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about a vacation idea for this summer, or really any time, that is unique, different, and affordable. I'm talking about a tour of the Grand Canyon in a van with Marvelous Marv, the world-famous tour guide. Marvelous Marv has lived in the Grand Canyon area for well over two decades, and he will show you things that no other tour guide will, and all the while fill you in on the history and the mystery of the giant canyon itself. When you go on a tour with Marv, you get to see the best viewpoints and the best exhibits. He knows this canyon. He knows this area of Arizona. Now on this page, there's a banner you can click on, and it will take you to Marv's website, where you can get all the answers about Marv and his Grand Canyon tour. This is a vacation you will treasure forever. Check it out, won't you? Marvelous Marv's Grand Canyon Tour. Jerry Pippin, and we are broadcasting from Roswell, New Mexico, on the 60th anniversary. Well, we don't have enough people in here for the applause normally. Yeah, we do. Okay. Yeah. We have a very interesting man here, Rodney E.J. Chang, and he has a book called Roswell Encounter Gallery. So, E.J., or what would you like to be called? I guess Robert.
Rodney.
Okay. Rodney, when we talk about this book, it's fiction, but it's all about, is it about Roswell?
It's about Roswell and the crash of 47, and I added a new twist to it, to make it entertainment. They crash again, they come back for the 60th anniversary. The saucers come back and land on Main Street.
Well, I often thought they might.
That's what, I came from Hawaii, and I'm still looking up. And I haven't seen anything yet, but, you know, it's daytime.
Now, in Hawaii, they have their share of UFO sightings and things like
right.
that, too.
As the author of this book, there's some of my childhood memories of some sightings that I've seen, and it sort of got me to the field.
See, I just had a hunch it was probably some more to the story than just him sitting down at a computer and typing out a fiction piece. Tell me, in brief, a little thumbnail about the book, and then I want to get to the sightings and your childhood experiences.
Okay.
Where's the gallery?
Well, right now there's no gallery.
Oh, okay.
It's all sci-fi.
It's in your mind.
The gallery's in the book, but okay. I'm also here to look at property, and I'm trying to locate it close to the future site of the UFO Museum on 7th and 8th Street, and I think we found the house.
You've come to Roswell, and you intend probably to stay, or at least come back.
Right, or set up a business where it's going to be an art gallery dedicatedly, totally to UFO space and alien art. And if an artist was going to...
My first question is, do you have some alien art already?
I'm a UFO artist.
Okay.
So it's coming home.
Yeah. Is this somewhat like, you get inspirations and somebody takes over and you paint the paintings, or do you think you've had these experiences? I got to get to these experiences.
Okay.
But is this a story basically where the gallery... The paintings come alive, or what? What's the story?
Did you read the book already?
No.
Right now, I have the series going with some other artists where we have portraits of 12 different aliens, and like in the book.
In the broadcast business, I immediately think of this as a great TV series. I go into the gallery, and each story's got one. So remember that. Find you an agent. Get that going, too.
Okay. Well, it's written to be a movie script. Okay. In fact, I have a couple guys in Hollywood looking
at
it.
Well, then you don't have to find an agent. You've got somebody.
Okay. And since I'm an artist, I write in a very visual way. So it's like, you know, scenes. And I hope to recreate the scenes in this particular book so that when there's a brick-and-mortar version of it in Roswell, people with certain expectations will see the story come alive in our reality.
Do you have any of your paintings with you?
No, I didn't think you could see it on the radio.
No, you can't. But I was just curious. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do have one, but it's going to the Roswell Museum because I've gone to the Jewish show.
And so, we may try to get down there and get a picture. You need to get it to us so we can put it on the website.
Okay. I think Bob has that.
That'll be a good idea.
Okay.
Now, tell me about your experiences in Hawaii.
Okay. Well, way back, I used to go with my family to the drive-in when there was still a drive-in. And at one time, I was on top of the car on the roof, and I saw this object in the sky, and it just zigzagged all over the place. Uh-huh.
How old were you when that happened?
About 9 years old.
Do you think you've had more than just sightings or just...
Well, there's a very strange thing. I hate to admit it in public because you might think I'm a weirdo.
Well...
But it did actually happen. So through the character. So I'm protected. The character, but it really happened in my life. At one time in the 90s, I had several computers running and I have a program. And I have an art background, obviously. You know, and I had the computers make the pictures sequences overnight because I do a lot of 3D and it takes forever back then in the 90s process all that stuff. But anyway, I came down the stairs one and there was this picture that I didn't do of Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it happened.
And did you print it out? Do you have it?
It's in the book.
Okay, good.
But
what was Marilyn?
I didn't see the connection because I wasn't in.
Was it a portrait or a what?
It was a portrait. It looked like a ghost.
Oh, really?
It's black and white. It's haunting. It was obviously her. Uh-huh. I didn't see the connection with UFOs because I didn't know the connection about the Marilyn Monroe thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so now that I'm into all this to do research for the book, then I realize, wow, she's part of all this. So that's another of my motivations to come here, do the house, convert it to a gallery, and have one bedroom converted to like a shrine to Marilyn Monroe. With that painting that I didn't do, that just kind of popped up.
It just came there.
Came through the silicon chips. So in the book, the curse of the computer moves by itself, and I'm sleeping upstairs, and it's the aliens are like putting.
And then, well, this basically happened.
It happened. Yeah. And it's gonna. I think I'm gonna make a lot of money off this print because it just came out of nowhere, and it's Marilyn Monroe, and it's tied to all this. And here I am to promote, like she wants to come through, you know.
Well, any other interesting paintings like that?
That's it.
No.
I basically do a lot of abstract. Oh yeah, this one here.
Uh-huh.
It's called Assembly. And
you're,
I guess,
showing me a part of a book.
Yeah,
here.
It's
book. When you pick this book up, it's available at Amazon.com. By the way, we have a link to it.
If I get this gallery going, I'm going to have to ship it. It's going to be cost to bring in an 11-foot by 6-foot painting. It consists of 235,000 hand painted pixels, 4x4 millimeter squares. And what this painting will serve as you can see, it looks alienated. In the story, if you stand in front of it with the right proper system going, then you can walk through, and in the back of the wall of this house that I'm planning to get is the parallel dimensions where the aliens have a UFO base to handle the sightings in the local area. More convenient than coming from the backside of the moon. Yeah.
And when you write these stories...
Uh-huh.
You think this would make a good movie, and it sounds like it would.
I made sure that it was a lot of action in it, uh-huh. And there's also a love story in there.
So it's modestly, you say, a terrific read.
I think so. I wrote it to just, it should just flow. I read it so it's not boring, so that you just can't put it down. And then a lot of people get through it in 2 days, even if it's 400 pages.
Now, you're going to have to explain to me how this computer image became an 11-foot thing. How did that happen? Oh. I mean, how'd you know it would? It just was that what it was supposed to be, or did you?
No, I didn't know that.
That.
I just started seeing the aliens in it, you know, 15 years ago. But I did it because back then in the 80s, I'm known as the father of computer art in Hawaii. I'm the first guy that was using a computer, and back then we had Amiga, which had only 1 megabyte of RAM, and so everything was real pixelated, you know, low resolution.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll be the only fool to actually paint it out. I'll be the human printer. So it took a whole year of paint, you know, and so I captured every. I try to be honest and loyal to all the pixels and replicate every single thing on that screen. And it came out. That's how it came out to be 11 feet.
So if I understand this correctly, you did it one pixel at a time?
Yes. With a tiny little Chinese brush to get the square corners. Yeah,
you're a patient man.
Well, actually, I paid somebody else to do it. She was my human printer. She was a graduate student. Yeah. She's now a food professor.
Oh, he's an entrepreneur, too. See, he understands what it is. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm a dentist.
And you have a practice in Hawaii?
Yes, I do.
You're going to move your practice to Roswell?
My wife won't let me.
Okay, you're going to have to stay in Hawaii.
Well, she said there's no way she's going to move to Roswell. I can come and visit her later whenever I need to. But in the story, being a dentist, I'm still in private practice. There's this scene in the book where this weird individual comes in and wants full veneers to hide all its sharp teeth.
Yeah.
So I try to use a lot of my own personal life to enrich the characters.
Have you had anybody come in, a little vampire teeth, and say, I'd like to have these fixed? I don't think that it's in Hawaii. That's paradise. There wouldn't be any vampires there.
No, it's basically UFOs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also,
our new T-shirts out here on the Jerry Pippen T-shirts from Roswell, we show an alien skull with teeth, and Larry Dickin, who's a purist and our executive producer, said, now, the UFO ETs did not have teeth. You can't put that on the T-shirt. So we had a huge debate about that.
Uh-huh.
And then Roberta Scott, our location producer, found some other people who said, yeah, they had some teeth. And so,
well, I got around that issue in the book. She has teeth because she's a transgenic mutant.
Okay.
Okay, so it's just a spin-off of the Hawaiian, I mean, not the Hawaiian, but the human genes.
And a transgenic person, do they still have to go to the dentist to get their molars filled?
Well, they don't, but she had these peg teeth, and she was tired of her looks.
Okay.
So she wanted, really nice luminaire veneers.
Right. She wanted to look like Marilyn Monroe or somebody else similar.
Yes, right. Yes.
I understand. So you're convinced that you had, while you were up sleeping and your computer was working away, you had a paranormal experience about Marilyn Monroe. Something came and intervened, huh?
Right, it's a miracle.
No explanation, you just know it happened.
I like it the way it is. I don't try to investigate it further. I'm just going to bring that picture to Roswell where it belongs, I think. You know.
When do you think you might actually get this Roswell Museum open, this art gallery?
Well, I just came back from the property half an hour ago, and it's pretty good condition.
So you're working on it.
Yeah, it might be open by the next couple months.
Oh, so in other words, by fall we may you're going to move fast on this.
Right. I won't move personally, but my friend Robin here.
Yes.
She'll be the gallery manager, and she's thinking of taking on a position to get it going.
Well, great, Robin, and you know when we get it open, you got to let us know so we can give you a nice plug.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodney Chang has got some great ideas, and you liked them, huh?
Yeah. When
I... So you've got to, you're pretty optimistic this is going to happen then.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there you are. Rodney, anything else you'd like to bring out that we haven't talked about? You got some notes here.
Yeah. Well, I think
I hate to give away a little professional secrets.
Well, I never did refer to them. I didn't even have to. You're great to work with here. But I think what people should think about this particular book is that it basically says that the aliens in this book of fiction are using art now, fine arts, as another way to communicate their messages, you know, which is, of course, you know, the salvation of mankind from himself. They do the crop circles, they've done the crash, and incidentally, I don't know if other people say that, but my book, which is fiction, of course, says they crashed intentionally.
Okay,
because they wanted to give us more tangible evidence that they are here other than their intentional sightings.
You mentioned crop circles. I've always thought they were alien art. What do you think?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, and your particular expertise or abstract things like that?
Yes, there's an overlap. In fact, I did some crop circle pieces.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And in fact, in the book, if you like crop circles, when you go through this painting and you go into the parallel dimension in the gallery, Then there's a place where crop circles are being designed. They have to spend time in designing right before.
Well, sure, you got a designer place.
Yeah, so it's coming out right out of Roswell.
Probably
on
the 23rd floor of some nice building somewhere. No, where was it?
It's in the gallery inside the walls.
Inside another
it's
dimension.
It's a big space. It's parallel dimension. Oh, that's right. It's one of your front. The gallery's a front because you have a UFO base inside the gallery and a design studio for crop circles in this little house.
Well, it sounds to me like you pretty well covered the bases here, Rodney Chang.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the name of the book, again, is Roswell Encounter Gallery.
Which is going to be the same name of the gallery.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. It's a book, but it's also going to be real.
Yes.
Here in Roswell, probably by the fall.
Uh-huh.
You're here to do some business. You're not wasting any time when you get to Roswell.
Right. And I want to say that this book is also, the goal was to vindicate all those that, you know, had to keep silent, that whole generation. So in my book, the townspeople are the good folks, the good people. And you know who the villain is.
Who is the villain?
The government.
Oh, okay.
Uh-oh.
Gee,
I it's going to be harder to get through airports now. I'm going to get on some terrorist list.
Uncle Sam? Robert, Rodney, I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This
is Jerry Pepin. We're broadcasting from the UFO Museum, actually down the street, the Civic Center. And we will continue from Roswell.
Hello, this is Farah Hürdüze. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pepin Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Farah's banner for the answers to the most personal question. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pepin. We're in Roswell, New Mexico, 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash, and this is quite an experience for me. The Dolans are here. No. There's a Ken and Doria Dolan.
Yep.
They do a financial show. So are you ever going to get your husband on the air with you?
I did last week, actually. It was his birthday, July 1st.
A lot of people around here seem to have birthdays about the same time in July. I wonder if
isn't
there's something.
Isn't that kind of creepy?
Yeah, it is. Rosemary Ellen Guiley over at Fate Magazine, she had a birthday today. Somebody was in here yesterday, 777. It's their birthday.
Wow.
Well, they had little horns coming out of there.
Oh, God.
You actually made a presentation here. I'm used to your husband doing these things.
I made my first presentation ever. That was my first.
Well, tell me what you talked about.
Ever. I talked about UFOs, aliens, and media desensitization of children. So what I did, I presented images of TV shows for kids like Teletubbies and Boobah, which a lot of people here probably haven't even heard of.
Oh, I have.
If you have little children or small grandchildren, then people have
heard
of
them. Well, I'm dialed bad. Of course, I don't watch those shows.
Yeah.
But no. Tell me what's happening there with that.
Well, all I did was present the images, and I said, you know, I don't know whether this is the result of some conspiracy, some grand plan to put out alien images to get kids accustomed to seeing them, or if it's just a pop culture thing that this is what's big right now. But the effect is kids are getting used to seeing these images. They have these little friends with big round heads. The Teletubbies look like they're wearing space suits. They've got antenna coming off their heads, little receivers on their bellies. Boobah are even worse. I mean, they just have these enormous eyes. They don't even have a lower face. They're just eyes. And they come in a craft. The show starts with this image of a silvery ball coming flying across the sky. It comes down and crash lands, and then you see inside it, they're all sleeping in these little pods inside the thing. And when they open up, they have these beautiful, big, black eyes. And they look like grays, except that they're big and bright colored.
So the hypothesis of this presentation would be that perhaps it's just not only interesting to kids to have characters like this,
mm-hmm.
but there may be an ulterior motive.
There may be, and that's what I'm curious
about.
So you're
preparing us for disclosure or for an invasion or a visitation or what? Or all of the above?
Or maybe somebody's saying, you know what, when we've been coming and doing abductions, we surround people in their beds at night, they wake up and they fight us because they're scared. You know, we want little kids to wake up and see these big round heads and these big black eyes and think, oh, okay, Teletubbies are here. I'm going to go play.
Well, that's a
so
good
I
point. You raise an interesting thing. And, of course, when we talk about these things, this is not the first time I've heard this theory. But, hey, it's logical.
I've never heard anyone talk about it at a conference
before.
Not in person.
I mean, I'm talking about just individually visiting
exactly,
with people.
Exactly, not a presentation.
Right,
I've talked about it in conversation with people, and almost no one I talked to knew what I was referring to when I brought up Booba, for example. Everyone knows Teletubbies. Nobody had heard of Booba.
Well, what I'm talking about is a general idea of all of a sudden you came out with War of the Worlds, again, a remake, why at this time, et cetera, et cetera. And now you're bringing it up from the children's television aspect, which is a great insight into possibly we're all being, as you say, desensitized. Something's going to be happening.
It is interesting because, as you pointed out, War of the Worlds came out, and that's an image of aliens attacking. These are big, scary aliens.
Right.
We have to fight them. We have to defeat them. Then, of course, we went through movies like Close Encounters and E.T. What we're finding now, the most recent things are coming out, are things like Teletubbies and Booba, where the aliens are gentle and they're fun, and this is being directed at very small children, preschool age and very young school age. And what they're seeing, and Disney's Lilo and Stitch, there's a little alien who's always pictured dancing on the beach with his little grass skirt with a little Hawaiian girl. Gosh, that's not anything we need to be afraid of, right?
No, of course. No. It's an excellent point. Now tell me about the radio show.
I actually have only been doing it for about a month. I have done four shows. Oh, I did five. I did one yesterday.
Yeah.
From here.
Now, it's on what, once a week?
It is on once a week. It's called Through the Keyhole. And ordinarily, I broadcast on Sunday afternoons from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I follow Guy Malone, who's live from Roswell.
Right.
Come after him. I actually got my start.
Well, I think Guy's going to be doing his show today. Or maybe
right.
Not.
He told me last week he's preempting me today, so I got mine in yesterday.
Okay. so now when we do this, and we've had Joe Montalvo on the air with us here. Let's give that website and everybody so they can hear you. Or how do we find you?
Oh, how to get to my show.
Yeah,
you can
go to Joe's. I want to get to you.
Okay.
Your show.
We're plugging
your show. But
well, thank you.
That's the same network, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's broadcast on ParanormalRadioNetwork.com. You can also get to it from our site, Rich's and mine, is KeyholePublishing.com. It's like looking through a keyhole. And the name of the show is Through the Keyhole. We took the name from the publishing company.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of publishing companies, what's happening there?
We published Rich's first book, UFOs in the National Security State, which came out in 2000.
Oh, he's one of our favorite people to have on the air. We know about that book a lot.
Yeah.
But tell what else you got going?
Well, he's working on Volume 2.
Okay.
Still working on Volume 2. A lot of things came up last year. He got a chance to do a TV show on the Sci-Fi Channel, which was a fantastic opportunity. He had a lot of fun, and it was a great show. But he lost a lot of writing time, so that pushed everything back.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. You think, well, it's only a show, and they tell you, it won't take much time, a few stand-ups here and there, and, of course, the next thing you know, your whole life's there.
Yeah. Well, he actually lost a few
months
to that.
You're going to become a TV star like your husband?
Oh, I'm working on it.
Maybe as I kicked it off about the famous Dolan family in the financial world, maybe you guys will have a UFO call-in show and a TV show every day. You want to do something like that?
I would love that. That'd
okay,
be great.
Maybe somebody listening will give you the opportunity.
Hey,
how do they find you on the website? Your website again.
On our website?
Give it one more time.
It's www.keyholepublishing.com. And now, when you go to that page, there's a link on the first page to go to mine with information on the radio program and everything that I'm doing.
We're running short of time here because it's very rushed. What's your impression of Roswell this time around, and what's happening? You come across any new information, any scoops you can give me or something? Any great gossip?
Oh, gosh. You know what? We have been so busy because I actually don't have any new scoops. I'm so sorry. I've talked to a lot of really wonderful people. I did, as I said, I did my first.
Do you think the Roswell event is the way we perceive it, or there's actually several perceptions out there? I'm kind of putting you on the spot because you're in Roswell.
I definitely think something happened.
Okay.
I think there was a crash. I think it's all legitimate. I mean, when the military goes in a few days afterward and they go shoulder to shoulder across such a huge area, they go into people's homes looking in their sugar bowls to retrieve pieces. I don't think that's standard operating procedure for retrieving a weather balloon.
I agree
with
you.
So, you know, that alone makes me think, yeah, something happened.
What kind of subjects do you like to deal with on your radio show?
I deal with ufology. I also deal with paranormal. Rich focuses on ufology, but I was interested in paranormal topics before I even met Rich.
And so, when we talk about paranormal topics, are you talking about my favorite subjects, ghosts and haunted houses?
Absolutely. My first program on my debut show, I interviewed Ryan Buell, the founder of Penn State Paranormal Research Society. The following week, I had a friend of mine on who spent 30 years studying the history of Wicca. So we talked about paganism and the pagan holidays.
Yeah, you know, the first time I started doing paranormal shows, a couple of ladies walked up and they talked about, they were proud they were witches, and I just had to, now I'm into it, but at the time I was kind of astounded about the whole idea.
Yeah.
You seen any ghosts yourself? Or other events that you can't explain?
Probably, I believe that probably everyone in the world has seen ghosts, but there are always occasions where you see somebody, you might talk to them, and then later you talk to someone else and they say, oh, it couldn't have been that person, they died yesterday. I mean, I think that kind of thing happens all the time. And I think probably everyone in the world has seen ghosts, whether they realize it or not.
So you think if we were not so wrapped up in ourselves and started looking around, we might be surprised at what we do see?
I think everyone has the ability to see a lot more than we think we do. I think that we need to be more open to it. We need to pay more attention to what's actually in the world around us and stop watching TV all the time, which kind of led into my presentation also. I said, look, if you're going to watch TV, that's fine, but pay attention to what the messages actually are. Look at what people are really telling you and what people are really telling your kids.
Anyway,
turn off the TV a little bit.
You hear extraterrestrial.
I just ruined my chance to get on TV, didn't I?
No.
I said turn off the TV.
That's the reason I was changing the subject really fast. I thought, because we were just pitching you through a series with your husband.
I know. Jeez, I just blew it.
Hey, you won't offend these guys. If you get a rating, they'll give you a job anyway. We have no pride when it gets
down
to it.
Works for me.
Now, we're almost out of time. We've got to make room for it. You mentioned Guy Malone. They're coming in here and doing the next show, so we need to break down.
I would like to just thank Guy Malone. I want to point out he's done an amazing job, not only organizing this whole conference, but for me personally, Guy got me my start on radio. He had me on his show as a guest. He had already arranged that he was going to interview Rich at some point when he started his show live from Roswell. Guy had the idea to call me one day and he said, hey, why don't you come on and talk about what it's like to be married to a UFO researcher? So I thought, okay, so we got on, we had a really good time, and the ratings were very good for that show. So a couple weeks later, he interviewed Rich. At the last minute, he called me and he said, hey, can you come on too? And we'll just chat. And we did, and I ended up doing the whole show with them. And again, we had really good ratings.
Well, now how does Rich feel about all this?
Rich is amazingly supportive
about
this. He's really...
He's a great guy.
He's fantastic. And, you know, when I was chatting with Guy, and I talked about this media thing, and he said, well, why don't you come and talk at the conference? So I said, okay, you know, I don't know if I can do this. I went to Rich, and he just was incredible about helping me put my presentation together because I'd never done this before. He told me how to do it. He put PowerPoint on my computer, taught me how to use PowerPoint all the way through. I mean, talked me through this whole thing, and every time I had a panic attack thinking, I can't stand up in front of all these people and talk, and he's like, you'll be great. Just calm down. You'll be fine.
Well, I hear it went well.
Well, thank you. It did. It was very well received.
You know, I used to do stand-up comedy years ago, and sometimes if it's a new audience or something you weren't familiar with, you got a little butterfly or two. Mm-hmm. But when you get out there and they react to you, And the same thing when you make a presentation. You get a little confidence, all of a sudden it's great.
Yeah. Once I got going, it was fun. It was Saturday morning. We're watching cartoons.
So you are available if somebody wants to book you someplace.
Absolutely.
Okay, and they can check you out on your website.
Yes.
Get two for one, maybe.
Absolutely. We'll do teamwork. We're fine with it.
Or at least two for the price of 1 3/4.
Yeah. Spare travel expenses. Yes, we'll go anywhere.
Right. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on here, Jerry.
And we've got to get out of here, folks. The bumper music's playing, and we just really have enjoyed ourselves in Roswell. And until next time, I'd like to thank Roberta Scott, our location producer, Jane Swartley, our editor. Cheers.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.